The sacred land, it has seen many hands, it has wealth and gold, yet it is fragile and old, and now the greedy souls just don't care to know all the changes it will confront. So you know some people, they just won't understand, or just won't understand these things. Thank you for your message, but I don't understand.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Jamie Henn, who's the co-founder with Bill McKibben of 350.org, an environmental organization leading the fight against the Keystone XL pipeline. He has an article at the Huffington Post, "The Keystone XL Zombie Rises." Welcome to Background Briefing, Jamie Henn.
Good to be with you.
And the president visited Cushing, Oklahoma today, where the southern leg of the pipeline, the Keystone Pipeline, which he just approved, is supposed to begin. There are some immediate questions now about the very nature of this decision and whether or not this will basically have nothing to do. This, in fact, may end up raising the price of gas for American consumers, even though it's being sold in the drill, baby, drill sphere as lowering the price, because isn't it an open invitation for exporting American oil products? And already American oil products are the largest export commodity in the U.S.
Yeah, no, well, you brought up a lot of really good points there. You know, this pipeline has kind of been a scam from the start. So it's not surprising to see that we have a lot of propaganda out there about how it will lower gas prices and be good for America, when really this is a pipeline designed to take dirty tar sands oil, some of the dirtiest fuel on the planet from Canada, run it right through America's heartland over some of our most sensitive sources of fresh water, some of our best agricultural land in the country, ship it down to Gulf Coast refineries, and get it out for export. So it's a shame to see that the president has kind of been forced to adopt a bit of this and was there in Cushing today, standing in TransCanada's pipeline yard, talking about expediting the southern half of this pipeline. Now, it's important to remember that the pipeline is kind of in two parts. There's one that comes down from Canada, bringing the tar sands to Cushing, Oklahoma, and then a second pipeline that would run from Cushing down to the Gulf Coast. When TransCanada initially applied for a permit from the State Department to approve this Keystone XL pipeline that we've all been fighting, they tied those two pipelines together to make it one big project. But they really never needed a federal permit for that bottom half. So that's one of the reasons why the president is out there saying that he's going to help expedite it, because really he doesn't have much to do with it. So that pipeline's going to go forward either way, except for, of course, the fact that landowners along the route and national environmental groups are promising to give it as much opposition as it can. So, you know, this has been a long saga, as I was writing about. You know, this zombie keeps coming back no matter what we do. So today was certainly a disappointment, but by no means does it mean that the full Keystone XL pipeline has been approved, that the work that everybody has done has gone to naught. I think, if anything, it's shown people that we're going to have to keep the pressure up on this president. We can't back down.
Well, the new Gallup poll released today ahead of President Obama's speech in Cushing, Oklahoma, announcing the southern pipeline, Keystone XL pipeline, says it's 57% of Americans support building the entire Keystone XL pipeline, with 29% opposed. So it looks like the drill, baby, drill mantra has worked.
Well, it has to a certain extent. You know, there's some new things. There's been a lot of polls that have floated around, and this Gallup one that just came out was very much timed to kind of coincide with the president's arrival. One of the things that people leave out of the polling is really mentioning what sort of oil is flowing through the pipeline. I think Americans right now are feeling the pain at the pump. It's not surprising that a lot of Americans want more gasoline. What we need to know is that this pipeline does not carry regular crude. It's carrying this dirty, corrosive, dangerous tar sands oil that not only causes immense environmental destruction in Canada and leads to very high global warming emissions, but also is really bad for the pipelines themselves. The previous Keystone pipeline that was running tar sands fuel leaked 12 times last year in its first year of operation. So the promises we're receiving that this pipeline won't have any problems are, again, a pretty large scam. And I think the more the American people know about this, the more they'll realize that this is really meant to enrich big oil and not bring more product to the consumer. Of course, it's hard to get the word out, which is great why we have stations like yourselves and others who are trying to get the truth out about what's going on here. And, you know, I think that among people that have gotten that, they're very active and fired up. And you'll continue to see a really vocal opposition, not only from environmentalists, but from ranchers and landowners, and especially young people that have really risen up to fight this project.
Again, I'm speaking with Jamie Henn, who's the co-founder with Bill McKibben of 350.org, an environmental organization leading the fight against the Keystone XL pipeline. He has an article at the Huffington Post, "The Keystone XL Zombie Rises." I think a lot of the information about what's happening now in Canada is so damning that should be a huge wake-up call for anybody. The very environmental price that's being paid just to separate the oil from the sands up there means that you have to heat up water to a tremendous pressure in these hoses that separate the tar from the sand, and then all that brackish oil polluted water goes off into these vast ponds where it's stored forever. And I talked to Bill McKibben a while back about it, and he's flown over this area, and he said it looks like Mordor from the sort of dystopian world, you know. That's just going to get worse exponentially. And my understanding is, I've talked to some Canadian environmental experts, and they say that at a certain point, the Canadians are going to wake up and realize that the water that they're destroying is more valuable than the oil that they're getting out.
No, that's exactly right. You know, this is an environmental travesty of epic proportions. And if your listeners have a chance to Google just tar sands, you'll see these photos, and they really are shocking. It does look like Mordor. And I think, you know, this is a symptom of what we're seeing around the world right now, that as we've run out of the cheap, easy oil and resources we need to go for, we're starting to see all of these extreme energy projects where, as you described, we literally have to, you know, strip mine and boil the earth to get oil out. But that's not just happening in the tar sands. We're seeing that with mountaintop removal coal mining in Appalachia, and we're seeing it with fracking in a lot of places from California to Colorado to Ohio to, of course, places like Pennsylvania and New York. So I think more and more Americans are realizing that we're really at a crossroads. We can either go down the route of this extreme energy future where we're going to be seeing drilling rigs in our backyards and a lot of big new projects like Keystone XL that really only enrich the corporations that are putting a lot of money into supporting them, or we can really begin to choose clean energy and run in that direction hard. But we need to make a choice, and that's why I think it's disappointing to see President Obama saying he has this all-of-the-above type of energy approach. You know, as Bill wrote earlier, Bill McKibben, you know, you can't kind of drink 6 martinis at lunch and then have a vitamin water after and say you're not going to be drunk. You know, you kind of need to make some choices here, and we need the president to really commit to clean energy and stop kind of siding with the big polluters on these issues.
So why do you think that, given that the president is obviously on the defensive because of the price of oil, some time back, John Boehner, the leader of the House, told the Republicans that the price of gas is going to be the best issue we can run on this year. You can see how it is working out that way, both in the presidential campaigns and in the forthcoming House and Senate campaigns. So you would think, and I've been doing some investigations into it for some time now, and some of the people who actually know about the Commodities Futures Trading Commission, one of the former heads of it, And one of the leading analysts of the oil and gas markets, Fidel Guite, they've made it really clear that at least 30% of the price of gas today is a result of speculation on Wall Street on the commodities market by mostly the Goldman Sachs and the big banks, who own about 80 to 90% of all the futures contracts, not the oil companies and the truckers and the refineries that would normally need to secure a reliable supply, which is the basic rationale for a futures market. So the market's completely distorted. The pain at the pump, a third of what people are paying is totally going to these parasites on Wall Street. And the president is completely silent on this. You'd think that would be a winning issue, given that most Americans have figured out that they got hosed in 2008 when they bailed out Wall Street.
Right. No, I completely agree. I mean, you've hit the nail on the head with this one. You know, some interesting polling is out there, and this is the other poll that, you know, needs to be circulated in some ways, of who Americans blame for high gas prices when they do get angry about it. And there isn't really a consistency there. You know, people do not kind of blame the president overwhelmingly. In fact, a lot of Americans already, without the information you were mentioning, blame big oil. They understand that these corporations are standing to make more money than any corporations in the history of money, that they're speculating, that they're taking the profits that they have and buying back their own stock to further enrich themselves, and importantly, that they're getting billions and billions of dollars, some estimates up to $40 billion a year, from the American taxpayer in the form of subsidies and handouts and tax breaks as well. So it really is. I mean, they have this system rigged, and no more so than in Washington, D.C., where they've given so many campaign contributions and spent so many lobbying dollars that you have Congress not even really willing to talk about the issue in an appropriate way and going on the warpath around gas prices like this as the Republicans are doing. So, you know, that's one of the reasons why I think for our work going forward, we're looking at Keystone XL. We will keep this fight going on. We'll be supporting landowners along the route who are resisting the project, but also really trying to expand this fight and go on the offensive around the dirty energy money that's in politics and these fossil fuel subsidies that are really distorting the markets in a way and blocking the types of solutions that we need to finally break this addiction to oil. And again, in the ultimate long run, really start dropping prices for consumers when they have access to clean, affordable, renewable energy.
But my understanding is that the big oil companies, Exxon and others, have tried to point out that they're not responsible for the price of oil. There's a global glut. The demand is down, both globally and nationally. And as I was saying earlier, one of the criticisms of this XL pipeline that the president's just approved is that that it will allow for more and more exports of refined products, and the U.S. is now the largest export commodity in the United States. So we're exporting more oil and refined products than ever. And the president said that demand is lower than it's ever been for decades or so. So there's a huge disconnect here. I just don't understand how the drill baby drill stuff works in the evidence, when the evidence is so clear. You got tons of oil, lots of supply, and normally in market economics, when you have an abundance of supply, then the price has dropped. Yet the opposite is happening. So there has to be another explanation. And the explanation is those predators on Wall Street.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. You know, and the volatility of the international oil market, which does have a factor. You know, again, President Obama laid it out himself when he was talking out of the clean energy side of his mouth, as opposed to the drill baby drill side, by saying it pretty clearly. You know, we have 2% of the world's oil reserves, and we consume 20% of the world's oil. There's no way to make that equation work, you know, for the long term. And we're going to need to find alternatives. And the president should be commended on his moves to strengthen fuel efficiency standards and make some of those other processes that the government has gotten into place. But the fact remains, you know, this is going to be a fight. The big oil companies and the fossil fuel companies are not going to stop trying to make a profit here. And until we can really begin to limit their power in Washington and get at things like these subsidies, I think you'll continue to see this kind of misinformation get out there so that, as you can say, they can continue to speculate, continue to make record profits, and continue to kind of misinform the American people about what really is the situation in our energy economy. You know, it would be nice if our president would get up there with a few quick slides or, you know, just use his amazing rhetorical abilities to try and explain this to people. But it looks like he's not willing to have that kind of brave approach or that principled approach to running this year. So we're going to do our best to keep pushing him on it. And we saw that just today after President Obama appeared in Cushing, Oklahoma, whose next stop was at Columbus, in Columbus, Ohio, at Ohio State University. And, you know, he was met by a lot of protesters there who were angry about Keystone, angry about fracking, angry about the oil industry. You know, those are students who worked for President Obama in 2008. You know, now they're out there protesting him because they feel like they need to put their energies elsewhere. So, you know, we're going to keep pushing the president, but it really is time that someone and some of our political leaders get those facts out there that you were mentioning.
Well, we wouldn't be having this conversation, Jamie Henn, if we had huge investments in public transportation and huge investments in they're starting to happen in the automobile industry and the changing over to hybrids and to battery powered cars, and the president's touting that a lot. But it's, you know, I'm astounded at how that, even though it's happening, that I don't feel that there's a huge kind of push behind it like there was to put a man on the moon or something like that. I mean, in fact, in many ways, you know, you get very depressed when stories come out about the new Chevy Volt catching on fire, which turned out to be a completely overblown story. Is there this atavistic kind of conspiracy out there to keep us hooked on this drug forever?
Well, I think it's not even too much of a conspiracy. I mean, these companies make huge profits from keeping us hooked. So just like any good drug dealer, they're going to do everything they can to keep us out of rehab. You know, we have the technological solutions, as you said. I'm actually in Colorado right now, and just the other day toured the National Renewable Energy Lab, which is government-funded, and they're doing amazing research. You know, they're getting their funding slashed by Republicans in Congress, but these are scientists who are making amazing breakthroughs in thin-film solar technologies and new types of wind turbines and more efficient engines. We're making the technology work, but we need to accelerate that process, and then we need to begin to deploy it. But we're not going to be able to send those market signals until we really end the perversities in the market like subsidies, and also begin to really go after that ultimate subsidy that these companies enjoy, which is the right to just pollute our atmosphere for free. You know, your average restaurant can't just toss all of its garbage in the street and wait for the rats to come. And ExxonMobil shouldn't be able to toss all of its carbon into our atmosphere and make us live with the global warming impacts of that and the health impacts that come from pollution as well. So I think, you know, that's the core of this issue. And as you mentioned, with Occupy out there, with the Keystone XL protests, we're beginning to see a movement that I think is connecting the dots between these local struggles, these policy issues, and the, you know, iconic fights that we need to really fire people up. So, you know, I go back and forth between kind of being really downtrodden and feeling like we're not making progress, and then looking at all the momentum that there is around the country to take this on, to feeling like we might just have a chance this year to begin to tie this together into something that begins to set the national agenda in a different direction.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us here today, Jamie Henn.
Thanks a lot.
Again, I've been speaking with Jamie Henn, who's the co-founder with Bill McKibben of 350.org, an environmental organization leading the fight against the Keystone XL pipeline. He has an article at the Huffington Post, The Keystone XL Zombie Rises. We're going to take a brief station break, and we'll be back talking with an expert on terrorism, but more importantly, terrorists. We've been going to do a profile as much as we can on the French terrorist.